I guess.
Thanks.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah,
awesome.
Well, I just BYOC. It was on my back, so I thought I'd just put in.
Can each of you say your name so we'll get a voice thing?
I'm Carrie Hayes.
Chad Hayes. David Johnson.
Nope, they all sound alike.
The first question we'll get right.
Don't get an English accent. Okay, my first question is that really true, or I don't know how much of this is really true. Did the demon actually appear to Lorraine at her house? And then go to England?
Lorraine, here's the thing. Like, with Lorraine, I want to say yes in certain respects. In the spirit of this story, absolutely, because they were confronted in their own house with a very dark spirit.
And it's the same one?
Yeah, she felt a bit, well, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like that aspect is sort of like an amalgam from other cases they've worked on. The other cases where something had followed them home or was there, then they then at their home that they then later encountered. Like, sometimes they would talk about they knew when a case was going to come because weird things would start happening at home.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, in the spirit of the story and tying it together and bringing in what she experienced in the first movie and in The Conjuring and during the exorcism scene, we felt like it very well could have been the exact same one, and Lorraine had felt the same way. So it was like, okay, let's tie that in, and let's pay off what happened in the first movie and bring it into the second film, you know? And that was a great journey for her to go on, we felt. It just on an emotional level and what she and Ed got to experience. And because you don't think of those people ever being haunted because they go to other people's homes and help them. So by being those conduits, they tend to attract things as well. But we've asked Lorraine, well, how do you protect yourself? And she goes, well, I have God. I have the spiritual authority to not let these things affect me. And so that's how she lives. That's really cool.
Can you guys talk about, I think somebody said that horror was one of the two hardest genres to get right, horror and comedy. Two hardest genres to get right. Can you just talk about that from the writing point of view, getting it right, finding the right balance of scaring people, character motivation, and just finding the right mix of all that?
Well, I feel like they're things that are, the reason they're difficult and how they're similar is that it's something that you really have control over, like what being scared and laughing are just this sort of involuntary things that you really have to tap into. You kind of have to get under the hood a little bit. And I mean, for me, it's all about like looking at myself and what's going to scare me. You know, what are the things that creep me out, and what are the things that are hopefully universal then that will creep other people out. But in order for that to play on screen, you've got to care about the people that it's happening to. So I don't know.
Yeah, we do it. We approach it structurally, the way we approach it. And I think that's a really good question because it's sometimes very difficult to get it right, you know, and you do a lot of different stabs at it. But our approach in writing these things is like you love a roller coaster, okay? And a great horror movie is like a roller coaster ride to us where I'm going to go sit down, I'm going to go on this outrageously great journey, and I know I'm going to be scared to death, but then I'll also have little moments of reprieve. So you start off these movies, and you're going, tick, 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 just going up that first hill, and then we take you down, and then just when you can't take anymore, we give you a break, you know? And so if you can create the rhythm and the structure of that, it's a great journey, so that's where you start. So now, then you do what David said, you bring on these amazing characters that we feel make a successful horror film is when people can identify with them. They're on an emotional journey with them. And with Ed and Lorraine, David pointed out earlier, which is true, that the first movie was used to set them up as characters, and we have spent a lot of time like, this is their world, this is what they're about. In the second film, we didn't have to do that. The world knows. And so now it's, who are they?
What makes them tick a little bit more? Let's get more into the relationship, more to the love story, and less about like what they are and why they're doing it.
I also think, answering your question, the similarity between comedies and horror is all timing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's all timing. If you do too many scares too fast, you get burnout, you become numb. But, you know, what James does really good is milk the tension. Milk it. You're just waiting, then it doesn't happen, and then it happens.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like setting up the joke in a comedy, and what's going to make it
work? I'll be honest with you, writing a comedy just terrifies me. I couldn't imagine doing it.
Well, I think also in our movie, is what David brought up before was, you know, the love story is first and foremost, mm-hmm. and there's a horror story happening amongst it. Mm-hmm. But if you can relate to that love story, you're in. And then everything else that happens is kind of ancillary, but because you're vetted in those characters, you're going to start feeling for everybody in there.
Was that how you approached this? Did you start with their relationship, or was that in later revisions of the script?
Jed and I, when we were on the earlier drafts, wanted to expand their relationship, you know, because the response in Ed and Lorraine on the first movie was so overwhelmingly positive. Yeah. And Patrick and Vera working together, it just warms your heart to see these two. It's like they're the married couple. So the opportunity to really go, okay, how are we going to open this more and make it different? And it was literally about, you know, the setup for, you know, seeing Ed's death and make me that promise and all of that, you know, is their new journey. But I love their love story in this movie.
Yeah, and it's fun to, like, and for doing a second movie, like, they're the thing that carries from one to the next, and so by doing the second one, you want to go deeper with them than you had before. So from the, you know, you want to, like, that seems like the reason to do it, to find out more about them, you know.
And for horror movies, that's somewhat unusual. I mean, a lot of times you're following the monster from sequel to sequel, but this time you follow the heroes. Was that something that was always planned, or did that come later in the development or after the response from the first movie?
Well, it came actually as the early development of Conjuring 1, because
right.
the true story of the parents was given to Chad and I, and it was the family backed up a moving truck, and it was a haunted house, but we went, oh my God, Ed and Lorraine Warren investigated this? What if we tell this story from the Warren's point of view? Because they're always called into a house when it's already really bad. Mm-hmm. It's like calling a cop, 911, I need your help. And they're stepping in, and it was very important to go, what influences the professionals? How does this rock their world? How does it change them?
And I've given David this credit on what he said earlier, too, is what separates this, and I think makes it a good movie, is it's a horror film with a happy ending. And people are not going to be... You should comment on that, because I thought that was a great analogy.
Well, it sort of touches on what you were talking about, how most of the horror films tend to follow the villain. I think, because I was not involved in Conjuring 1, looking at Conjuring 1 from the outside, I think what made that work and what I wanted to work on with this was the fact that it wasn't following the villain, that it was a movie with a happy ending, that instead of putting a bunch of people in a haunted house and just torturing them and then killing them all, it was...
Which isn't bad.
Again, I like those movies too, but that what was fresh and interesting about this to me was that now I'm rooting for this family to succeed, and the fact that you have the sort of happy ending at the end of Conjuring 1 was very cathartic, and it's absolutely not something you usually see in a horror movie.
Right.
And that seemed what was doing this one. It's a love story, and it has a positive ending, and everybody gets out of it okay, and they're dancing at the end. It just seems like such an interesting twist on the genre.
Well, going back to what you said earlier about, you know, how James likes to milk the tension, mm-hmm. in coming into this one, knowing that that's kind of his style, were you able to kind of write closer to how you thought he would?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah.
Okay, and what would you say is, what would be an example, a prime example of, like, you know, a James-ism?
The engine coming out of the, you know, when the little boy looks down, he hears the noise, and he looks out there, and then... You know right away you got to do it three times for James, right?
Exactly, right.
And he looks out again.
Well, you know, I think the other thing that I like that he does, and this isn't necessarily always scripted, but the long shot that he does.
Yeah.
He has so many long shots where you stay in this shot for so long. You start to accept, well, nothing's going to happen here because you're not... Usually you're cutting to a scare. And this one is like, you're going to stay, be in the mom's room. You're going to follow mom down the hall. Now we're in this other room, and she's looking around this room. We still haven't cut. And then something that has been in frame for this whole long shot suddenly moves across the room and scares the crap out of you.
It's like the mirror shot down in the basement, you know, when you first... You know, revealed the nun. Carrie and I had such a great experience with James on the first time when the really scary when one of the girls looks under the bed and doesn't see anything, and she sees something behind the door in the shadow, you know, and she's like, and we're on the set with James, and we're going, so when you come in on that, what are you going to put in that darkness?
The witch going to, like, come out?
And he goes, no, I'm not going to put anything there. Your brain puts it
we
there.
We go,
right?
What's she looking at? And he goes, a good actress will tell you what she's looking at.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go back to the comedy thing. Like, in comedy, often they say there are rules. Like, there are things that you don't make jokes about. Do you think, like, is there anything in terms of horror, like, where you just wouldn't go there?
I think the purpose of horror is to go there, right? Like, that's almost where you start, is if, I think if it's really scary, it's the, and it's not always the monster that's, that pops in my head is The Exorcist. Like, for me, part of the scariest part of The Exorcist is my kid's sick, you know, and you start off there. That's the line you don't cross. My kid is sick, and that takes you immediately to an uncomfortable place, and then it gets worse, you know.
It's tropes that you use, like when people love this in the first movie, is like, you know, Lily goes to the door, down to the basement, she hears the noise, and we've been in audiences where they go, don't go down there! Don't go down there! And then, of course, you have to have her go down there, but the way you twist it up is she turns around to leave, and boom, the door hits her and forces her to go down there.
Right.
So that's the little twist in this kind of a movie. Instead of just being the dumb mom, like, I'm going to be brave and do all that, she's actually terrified and thinks she's going to lock it in there. So you try to do that as much as you can so you don't fall into that, oh, I've seen that before, you know, kind of thing.
You try not to get a laugh.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be scared.
Right.
Patrick said that there is a rumor, maybe, of another movie that's already getting great reviews. Are you working on a third one?
Or is it we were just talking about all that? No, the idea really is to, where do you go with their relationship next? I thought that was a very good point you brought up. And then work backwards from there, because it really has taken center stage on it, and you can come up with scares, and there's, you know, when we first started, we gathered about 27 of their episodes from Lorraine, and there's
case studies,
just like Annabelle, just like, you know, this one, and just Enfield, and then with the parents. So, you know, I think that's the important next step, is to really come up with what that's going to be.
I was speaking with James earlier about how there really hasn't been an epic horror movie since The Shining. Was the script any longer, or did that all come in the cut?
I don't think it was. I mean, the scripts never seemed long.
No.
I mean, but as the writers, we're always sort of surprised, I think, how long they wind up being.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, it's
but,
a
but,
long
I mean,
shot.
But, I mean, there was always, like, just sort of built into from Conjuring. One, this sort of, like, I don't know if we necessarily, if this epic idea of, like, you're starting with two stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the family that's
in jeopardy,
happening to, but there's this you're the first half of the movie, your main characters are almost a subplot, because their story has to be big enough in the first half to be worth cutting back to.
Right.
So it just sort of becomes bigger because of the way those movies are structured, I think.
Yeah, these movies have become collision courses, you know, basically, where do they come across, and then what happens when they get together. And it's fun because you get to build up on two different levels, two different families, you know, family dynamics and the characters. And, you know, a lot of what makes good horror movies, back to your thing, is the acting in them. It's such a difference. This little girl who plays Janet was just remarkable. Just absolutely remarkable, and has a huge career in front of her. It makes all the difference. And James knows how to pick them. It's awesome. It's really awesome.
You were talking about doing the research, and you have like 27 files and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of those files make you kind of stop listening and call it a night because they were so...
He writes at night. Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the experience with these guys with the Warren files, but I mean, for me, like, I was writing at night one night, looking at Amityville crime scene photos as I was writing the vision bit, and I was like, my family's in bed asleep, I'm getting all these crime scene photos of this family in bed. I was like, I'm calling it. I'm calling
every
it
noise is echoing out in the empty house.
That wasn't good. That
picture always freaks me out, of the little ghost boy with the reflective eyes.
Right.
Is that one. Carrie had, in the first Conjuring, started having water poltergeists show up at his house in his kitchen, and that was kind of freaky. And then we would hear, when we would talk to Lorraine, on the phone. I don't know if I said this here earlier, but we would just doing research with her, and suddenly we would start to hear like voices on the phone crackling, and she would go, "Remember what we're talking about? They don't want this. They don't want this." And she would just start praying,
like,
"In the name of
that?
Jesus, I command you." Blah 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 blah, like this, and it would just get quiet and go away. And then we keep talking another 40 minutes.
But it was just an ordinary.
She's just so used to it.
Is everything out? It's like, oh, well, hold on a second. You know, I forgot the oven's on. Let me turn it off.
So she's still doing these investigations on her own at 85.
I think she gets
stuff
called
comes
in
to
on
her.
Her.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
She, yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, not like she was. Yeah, not like she was. But I mean, like, it's not. She can't turn it off. Like,
yeah.
This is just like,
wow.
This is like how she goes about her life, is going into rooms and knowing what happens there. You know,
she can do that. That's
85?
Really trippy. Six
yeah,
now.
86.
Yeah. Just sharp and so much fun.
Is there any scene that she said, like, particularly that really affected her, like, and seeing it, like, in on the big screen?
I haven't talked to her about this screen. Has she seen the movie?
I don't know about this one. Do you
well,
see no,
the
first talking
one? About the movie, though,
oh,
that she
one.
Was very tortured being a parent and what was going on with this other family,
mm-hmm.
with the kids, because they just want to fix it. You just want to make it right, and the only way you can make it right is understand what it is. And then deal with it. And then the hardest thing is you can't just go away from it, is keeping them in the mix and trying to keep as normal as they can, a normal family, because they always felt blessed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this blessed marriage, blessed child, blessed life, and we can step in. So they're always stepping into families that are so disrupted by darkness that she goes, it always weighs on you because you want it to fix it faster.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys.
Oh, right.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Congratulations.
Bye-bye.
Thank
you
very much.
Spooky.
Okay.